Привет, comrades, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week, we're looking at glorious film Death of Stalin, directed by Armando Iannucci. Returning on show today to talk about the death of Stalin is Professor Marie Westaver. Comrade Westaver, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Yeah. And you sound like Gru. Yeah.
All right, now I'm going to stop with that. But, so, this is a great Cold War, like, satire. And it's very similar in a way, showing, like, you know, the incompetency of the government. It's a bit like a Doctor Strange look in a way, even though there's no nuclear Armageddon in this, you know, looming in this movie, but still very Doctor Strange love-ish.
You know what it reminded me of is Art Spiegelman's Mouse, which is a very famous graphic novel about World War II and Nazi Germany, where the cats are the Germans and the mice are the Jews. And it's very, very well done because you get all caught up in it, even though it's a cartoon, a comic, and even though it's animals, not people.
Good point. And what's interesting about this movie, when you were telling me, you said this is going to be like a Monty Python, very madcap-ish. I was really expecting it to be almost just completely like joke a minute, joke a minute, joke a minute. You know, and there's like kind of silly slapstick, a lot of goofy characters. And there is in this movie, definitely. But there's still a lot of moments that, you know, play very seriously. And I thought that was really interesting where, yeah, it's definitely laugh at a lot of these parts. But, you know, when they're showing, like, prisoners being murdered one by one, you know, the one of the characters, the kind of the gross stuff he does, you know, that stuff's not played as funny. That's played 100% serious.
It is. And actually, it's sort of like there's two tracks of things going on. There's all this machinations of everybody trying to outwit each other to gain power. Meanwhile, they're killing people in the background. So a lot of the humor comes from that sort of dry British comedy. That's why I said Monty Python, where the people who are involved in trying to outdo each other do funny things unintentionally. Meanwhile, you keep hearing, ah, as somebody else is slaughtered in the background or dragged off to be killed. And it's startling and dark and unexpected.
And one of the startling things is, I'm not sure if this actually happened, but when it's Stalin's funeral and all these people line up because they want to see him, and they break through the line because they're not allowed, but they break through, they're shot down and killed. And it's just all they wanted to do was pay respects at a funeral, and they're getting shot down by their own government.
Yeah, Khrushchev knew that that would happen, so that's why he arranged it that way. I mean, who's the worst murderous thug in the room is kind of the game here. It's a lot of dark stuff going on. And if you read up about Stalin at all, a lot of the things that they don't really draw attention to are very obvious if you know anything about him. For instance, he did not let anybody disturb him while he was sleeping, or he would kill you. So those two guys standing guard outside the door, like, man, we haven't heard from him in a while. Should somebody go check on him? I'm not going to check on him. That's why they said that, because they knew, yeah, there could be something terrible that just happened. But if I go in there and I wake him up, I'll be taken outside and shot. I mean, how do you do that kind of job?
Mm-hmm. And that's what's interesting, because reading a little bit backstory, the director, Iannucci, was talking about how, you know, in today's world, Hitler, you know, obviously is, you know, considered the monster and everything. You know, any decent person knows that, you know, Hitler's this horrible human being who did terrible things. But he talks about with something with Stalin, he's like, says Stalin almost seems like he got away with it. Mm-hmm. Because he says, like, even because when he went to Russia to film some of the stuff he said that, like, there's still pictures of him.
Mm-hmm. Up in hotels and stuff.
Yeah, and he killed probably just as many or even more people than Hitler did. I always wonder, it seemed like, is the reason he got away with it just because he fought on the good guy's side in World War II? He fought against Hitler? I mean, I don't know.
That's a great question. I'm not sure what the answer is, but you're right. There are no German hotels that have, you know, a picture of
there are laws
of
against
the Führer. Yeah. So, but that's a different culture, too. And they lost the war, so they had to kind of go with the program to be rebuilt.
Yeah, it's just, that was just strange. He was talking about that. Just, he always seems to have gotten, it seems like he's, I mean, a lot of people still say, yeah, Stalin's a bad guy. But he's always seemed, but Hitler, it's like Hitler's the real big one, even though there's pretty much not much of a difference.
Yeah, I think maybe it's because so much of what Stalin did was covered up. You know, people just disappeared. You know, they didn't
went to Siberia.
Yeah, people just disappeared. So a lot of what he did was covert, where what Hitler did, you know, when it all came out, it was very, very obvious what he was doing. And Stalin killed his own people. Yeah, you would think he would not be a hero in anybody's mind.
Yeah, maybe it's just the fact that, once again, he fought against Hitler. And so even, there's even pictures. I mean, they have, like, conferences with the Allies. You got Churchill, you got Roosevelt, you got Stalin. So maybe we're like, well, he was on our side, so maybe he wasn't all
so
that
he
bad.
Did that one good thing.
Yeah, he did
okay,
one good
so
thing out of, like, 999.
So leave that picture up, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what you... What's interesting, it shows is how the hypocrisy of the USSR is when they have that kangaroo court for Beria. They say, you did all these horrible things. You're a monster. And you're looking at every one of them and like, none of you are any better than he is.
Right.
Yeah, and you're only bringing it up now because it's convenient for you to get him out of power.
Yes.
And you knew about what he was doing for years and you don't really care. You're just using it now as a power play.
And half of them were complicit anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were all involved. And I don't know if you noticed at the end, in the end credits, people's names were just sort of erased while you were watching
it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, that was another kind of subtle way of indicating that there should be a whole lot more people here, but they disappeared.
Mm-hmm. And it what's really interesting in this movie is, you talk about it, there is a lot of... Everybody is based on a real person in this movie. There's not one person who's fake. Like, even though I was interested, the piano player woman, she was actually a famous concert pianist in Russia, and she was a staunchly anti-Stalin for many, many years, which is surprising. I'm surprised he didn't have her killed for some reason. But, you know, she's historically accurate. Nearly everyone else in the film is, like, based on, you know, the actual people. So I thought that was interesting how many, you know, it's really the... basing it on all these people, and you're not taking any liberties as far as making up people's names.
And yet they tell you things like, you know, they're looking for a doctor, but there aren't any left because they killed them all. And that's just sort of tossed as an aside, like, oh, yeah, well, we're down to, like, the low, you know, what's left, the dregs.
Mm-hmm. And that's funny because when they're talking about it, it's like, well, if he's a good doctor, you know, it's like saying, if he's a good doctor, then you know that he's like a bad guy. But if he screws up, well, you know, he's a good guy. He didn't really want to kill the
It's like
Stalin.
That test of, you know, to see whether somebody's a witch.
Yeah. It's like a catch-22. You're screwed either way.
Either way.
And it has like all these great setups. This movie has great setups and jokes. Like the thing you were telling me early on was with the girl.
Yes.
When they're like, we got to find the girl that took that picture with Stalin. You know, we'll show it to you as, like, you know, you're continuing Stalin's humanity towards his people. And so they look for the girl. They bring him all these little girls. Like, no, she would be, like, you know, 12 or 13 by now. Get her. And so they get her. It's like, no, she's too old now. She's too tall. It doesn't work. Let's just get somebody who looks like her from that original picture. And they do. And so when he's having, you know, he's waving to the crowd from the balcony, she's too short, you know, because she can't see above the railing. So you just, like, see a little bit of her head.
Of her head. Yeah. Yeah, see, that sight gag was actually, I think, the funniest part of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's based on a French graphic novel.
Yeah, I didn't. I did. Have you read it? Or
yeah, I downloaded it on my Kindle and read it, and it's beautifully done. It looks a lot like Sin City, you know, very dark colors. Mm. None of the humor that's in the movie is in the graphic novel. It's all played straight.
It's all played straight.
And it's all, you know, all about the atrocities and all the things that he did, and all the other things. It starts off with the concert that Stalin decides he wants a copy of, but they haven't recorded it, so they have to recreate the situation. You know, the guy comes in shuffling in his slippers and his robe. Yeah, it's that's how the graphic novel starts out too.
That's very interesting. I wonder why Nucci decided that he wanted to not make it 100% serious and then do it like kind of this satire and this comedy of errors. I'm curious.
Well, you know, I think this is his wheelhouse because the other things that he's done, like Veep and In the Loop,
yeah,
are all about politics and the funny side of politics. Like one thing that I think is hilarious about Veep is every time Julia Louis-Dreyfus comes into her office, she says to her secretary, "Is the president called?" No. President is never called. You know, she's like, am I in something? Is something going on? It's that same sort of humor. But I think he really gets it right with the death of Stalin. I mean, the others are, I watched In the Loop last night, and it was okay. And it had its moments, but I thought Stalin really delivered.
Oh, yeah. And what's interesting how this film even made news in real life because it's been banned in Russia. And once again, we're talking about how, you know, it seems that they're very touchy of Stalin over there, that, you know, he wasn't that bad of a guy. And it's, once again, you kind of see it in this movie because they're like, no, we got to ban this. This is awful. Yeah. And if you read the reason they banned it, like, it's just baffling because it doesn't even seem like they watched the same movie because they were calling it slanderous towards World War II veterans and people who fought in Stalingrad. And like, did you miss the point of the movie? That it, like, okay, Khrushchev is talking about his wartime experiences in Stalingrad. So I guess they use that to say, oh, it's offensive. He's making comedy of the Battle of Stalingrad. But that's not the movie. That's a very small segment. It has nothing to do with what was going on here. It almost seems like they were looking for any kind of excuse to latch on to say, well, we need to have this band.
Yes, I think they just basically found it insulting, so they didn't want, you know, the bad side of of things coming out because, you know, they figure that's just one guy. But see, it shows you also that everybody that came after him was just as bad. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what they objected to. Not just that it was about Stalin did all these terrible things, but that everybody who followed him was, first of all, one of his lackeys and not any better as a person.
Yeah, I mean, even nowadays, I mean, you can say, well, you know, the Soviet Union's gone and they're different now, but, you know, who's running the country now? You got Putin, an ex-KGB agent who's probably done some pretty sketchy stuff too. So in the end, it's still this never-ending cycle because one of the best parts of the movie is at the very end when they've killed Beria, and they're saying, now, you know, now we can run it. Now we're good. Now we've gotten that monster out of there. And they're, at the very end, they're saying, well, we don't trust him. It was like, you know, like they're doing it's going
to
keep going.
You can't trust anybody because everybody will do anything to gain power. Of course, this is not limited to just these Russians, but this is that story.
Yeah. And one thing I do want to get your opinion on. Now, that little Russian thing I did at the beginning of the show, that's probably actually more an attempt at a Russian accent than anybody did in this entire movie, with the exception of Olga Kurienko, who played the piano player, because she's actually Russian. But nobody really tried a Russian accent. Everybody's talking, you know, British, and you got Steve Buscemi talking in that accent. And I wonder, did that deter you? Because it's like, this is supposed to be Russia, but everybody's talking in British, or you got Steve Buscemi talking like he usually does.
It did not bother me, and I read that the director insisted on having the characters not speak with Russian accents for two reasons. One, he thought it would take audiences out of the film. And he didn't want the actors to worry about their accent while improvising. So in an interview with BBC Radio, he said that Russian journalists who had seen it said that was a good decision.
That's interesting. Because you're saying they don't want to focus on the... Yeah. Because it's one of those things when you're doing that, you can either have it set people to, like, you're doing a movie in Germany, but you're talking in English. And then you just ignore that completely, or you try to make it more authentic with the accents and have subtitles and everything.
Yeah, and when you think about that, then you've kind of limited your audience because, you know, if you just say forget it, everybody's going to speak English with whatever accent they have. English is much more widespread than Russian.
Good point. And it reminds me a bit of like Hunt for Red October when you have Sean Connery who comes, I guess, from the Scottish part of Russia. But, you know, it's like that movie and even Judgment Nuremberg, I think, does that whole language barrier thing really well when – at the very beginning, you hear them talking and, you know, Maximilian Schnell and Judgment Nuremberg's talking in German. And then you have Sean Connery originally talking in Russian as the camera zooms in and it pulls out they're speaking in English. So you know exactly what's really going on. But
right.
That's a really good way to play it.
That is a really good way to play it. There was another thing that, if you know some background, was telling, is there's a scene where Beria locks a woman in a cell and then gives her a bunch of flowers when he lets her out. This is apparently something that he did. He was a notorious sexual predator, sometimes driven around Moscow in search of victims. And after he had finished with his victims, they were routinely offered a bunch of flowers. To accept was to imply that what happened was consensual. To refuse meant arrest and disappearance.
Oof.
So, you know, they throw these things in there. It's like, oh, it's some sort of weird ritual or why is he doing that? But if you know that background, you realize how sinister that scene actually is.
Yeah. And I believe like they're like that when you get the flowers, that was a young girl, right? Mm-hmm. She wasn't 18. Yeah. And I think that's one of the criticisms I think people have of this movie that I've heard some people say is that it glosses over the horrors of what was done by the Soviet Union and Stalin in particular. Because, you know, they say, well, how can you make something lighthearted out of this? And it does, I don't know, do you feel that glosses over?
No, because I feel like you come into it thinking, okay, so that happened. He did what he did. Kind of like you start off with Hitler and the Holocaust. That happened. We all know certain things. And then the story isn't really about that. Mm-mm. It's about how once that person dies, the evil doesn't really die, and what people do. So it's all about the sort of inner workings of politics, in which there's always lots of humor you can vein, you can, you know, plumb from that vein.
Yeah, and once again, it, like we said, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that is played seriously and not for laughs. Like you said, when Beria brings that woman into the young girl into the cell, or just like when they're murdering people in the prisons, or they're murdering their own civilians, like that's not played for laughs and jokes. And it's a bit similar to like what you had with Charlie Chaplin did with The Great Dictator, mm-hmm. when he's, sure, there's a lot of slapstick moments and moments that mocks him and Mussolini made for laughs, but when it's showing to like what he's doing to actual people, when it's showing he's rounding up the Jews and everything, that's not played for laughs at all. Like he's, I think in this movie, Onucci's balancing the line between show that make the horrible stuff play it serious and not for laughs, but show like the incompetency of the politicians and their kind of want their constant demand for one-upping each other. He shows that for laughs.
Now, we didn't talk about Jeffrey Tambor, but I do want to give him a shout out for doing a great job with his role. And I love how the whole no problem turns into no problem. Because apparently, I don't know Russian, but this is apparently where you put a full stop in a sentence can change the meaning of something. So you could say something that could be understood as pardon, impossible to execute, or pardon, impossible, execute. So that's I guess something that's true about the Russian language.
I didn't know that.
That the way you say things can make all the difference. But it did. That was one of those things. It's like, that's funny. Yeah. No problem, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is a great cast in the movie. Like you said, you got Jeffrey Tambor, you got Michael Palin,
so as Molotov.
Yeah, famous Monty Python connection.
Yes, Monty Python connection. And actually, I read up a little bit about him too, and he. Pretended he was like a man of the people, but then he dropped all these cluster bombs. And so they called those bombs Molotov lunches or something. So the Molotov cocktail went with it because it was the drink that went with the meal.
Yep. Now I was wondering how they came up with that, but now I got it. But yeah, you got him, Michael Palin, Jeffrey Tambor. You got Steve Buscemi,
yes,
who I think is
so funny.
He's hilarious
as
in this
Khrushchev.
Movie. Who else you got? You got... I think the guy from Homeland, I forget, Quinn from Homeland plays the son, and I think he's just hilarious because he's just this drunk
idiot. Oh, and that, what a poor situation he ended up with, because they allude to that plane crash that killed the whole hockey team. And then he was supposed to, like, come up with a new one. But everybody good had died. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Yeah. How can you threaten people into playing better hockey?
Yeah, and I believe he had two sons. Was this the son he was in a concentration camp, a Russian concentration camp, and then Stalin didn't even bother trying to get him out?
Oh, I don't know. They didn't go into that at all. They kind of went into the sister being very protective of what was going to happen to him.
Yeah, and that's actually interesting. It's the kind of, if there's like a voice of reason in this movie, that's just sort of, my God, this is such a mess. These are people are idiots. They're awful people too. Was Stalin's daughter. And I looked her up in real life. I was wondering, are they just playing nice and she was actually really that bad? She actually defected to America for a couple. She went back, defected to America, went back to Russia, and then she like lived a lot of time in France and England and stuff. That was really interesting. So was she disgusted by what her father and the Soviet government did?
I think she was afraid. I mean, afraid of him because he was so volatile. And then once things changed, you know, you're the previous administration's family. So I think she didn't feel safe. But interestingly, in the Washington Post this week, they were reviewing a book someone wrote. This person was the daughter of the man who helped her, Svetlana, arrange her defection and gave her a safe house in their farm on, you know, I think it was rural Pennsylvania or something like that.
Interesting.
And she helped, like, look after her. Hmm. So she got to know her, and she said she was very entitled.
Oh, well.
But how do you go from being the daughter of Stalin to just a regular civilian in the United States? Yeah.
Well, even you see in this movie what happens to the people who previously worked with Stalin. Like, one thing I didn't pick up on immediately was after Stalin died, they're getting all the people that worked in his house, the maids, the servants, the doubles and lookalikes, and they're rounding them up. But then when I saw they look at the doubles, like, well, we don't need them anymore.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they're killing them. They did nothing wrong. They were working with the guy. The guy dies, and now they're getting, you know, they're getting whacked. And
yeah.
I think that's just horrible.
Yeah, that's really shocking when you think about it.
Like I said, it's probably what she did. Like, well, now I'm no longer, you know, the daughter of the leader of the country. And, you know, they might want to have me taken out.
Now you're expendable. Mm-hmm. Plus, you might know something. By the way, one of the doctors who is called in to examine Stalin after his death, Carl Johnson, played a similar role in The Illusionist. I don't know if you remember The Illusionist, but in no, that he plays a doctor called in to examine the body of a deceased public figure, Sophie Duchess von Teschen. So they banded in Russia, Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, and Kazakhstan. But it did come out in Armenia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan.
Yeah, and I believe this film, it's a completely British film, right?
I believe so, although it has a lot of American actors in it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Steve Buscemi. And I do love that opening beginning, which sets up perfectly. It's interesting you say that that's actually in the book. But like in the book, it's actually, in the graphic novel, it's actually played 100% serious. Like, oh my God, we got to do
this. Right,
right. Yeah, which again, it plays like, he gets like 17 minutes. How long has it been now? Like 16 and a half, 16? I don't know.
Yeah, how long since I hung up that phone?
And then he's got up, you know, and then it's the, and he's like, well, Stalin won't recognize this. Like, were you saying Stalin's stupid? And they realize, oh, no, there might be a bug. And he was like, no, I think Stalin is
very
great.
Smart.
He's great. And then he passes out, and he's the conductor. So they got to get a conductor off the street, and they're bringing people off the street who don't really, like, you're just there to amplify the acoustics to make it more realistic.
Right, but homeless people coming in to hear a symphony, yes, to round out the room. You know, another thing I thought was really funny was Khrushchev and his diary. The way he would, you know, have these drunken scribblings and then the next day try to go over them with his wife. Okay, he laughed at this joke, but he didn't laugh at this joke. That's actually funny.
Yeah, because he's obsessing over, okay, well, I got to make it on his side. He likes this joke. And, you know, you have that when it's interesting about that meal in the beginning when they're having, then Jeffrey Tambor asks, you know, whatever happened to this guy? And then Stalin just stops and looks at him. It's like, you really want to go there? Do you really want to know what happened to this guy? And then there's this dead silence.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you don't want to know. Actually, that means that you really do know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, the other scene I like was when, you know, Michael Palin's wife was believed to be a traitor, and so she was imprisoned, but she was kept alive for these years. And then once Stalin's dead, Beria brings the wife back. And so he asks, like, what about your wife? And he's like, she was a traitor. She was a horrible monster. And then so Buscemi's like, well, yeah, she was awful. She's terrible. And then she shows up and, oh, I'm so, she was such a wonderful woman. I always loved her.
Well, you got to be careful what you say.
There's a lot of great moments. Like the other moment I really liked was, you know, just before Stalin dies, he's like, you know, struggling, he's pointing at this painting, and then so they're like, and it's just this little girl giving milk to a goat, little baby goat, and they're like, so what if the goat is the people, milk is socialism, and Stalin is the little girl?
Yeah, no, that's a little bit of a stretch. The guy that got to be Stalin actually looked a lot like Stalin.
Yeah, he's got the mustache and everything. Now, I know Stalin was very soft-spoken, and once again, obviously didn't have that, you know, cockney accent that the guy has, but it works well. So we could talk a little bit of, you know, you were talking a little bit about Armando Iannucci. Now, you said he does the show Veep, which I believe is still going on. I'm not sure if it is.
Yeah, I think it is. It's got several seasons in.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of it. And I know he did a BBC show called The Thick of It with Peter Capaldi, and then which was turned into a movie, In the Loop. And I know he's like this really foul mouth kind of a majority whip guy in British government. Have you seen any of that show, or you see the movie?
I saw In the Loop, and it's, you know, an American and a British guy both trying to avert a war. And like you said, the British guy is very foul mouthed and and again, a lot of machinations behind the scenes and how things, the deals that really get struck. And mine's a little bit of that in Veep, too, where you see Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, embroiled in things that matter in ways, and then power being taken away, or stupid stuff that you have to do, like show up at the right time at the yogurt place because they have a special yogurt made after you, and it's this big photo op. But meanwhile, you have some more important meeting you have to get to. So it's the, you know, the sacred and the ordinary blended together.
It seems like he's really good at showing that with politics. Like, you know, you got all the inner workings, you know, people one-upping each other for power, but then also just the silly little bureaucratic stuff they got to do. Like, once again, trying to find the right girl at the right height, you know, and then you screw up at the end because she's too short for anybody to see her.
Yes. Yeah. The the gag they keep repeating, coming back to in Veep, where, you know, she's Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the vice president. I don't even know if I've seen the president in the show. She's always doing all this stuff, but every time she comes back to her office, the president called? No. You can tell she's really marginalized.
Yeah. Well, that's what that's usually what vice presidents are. They're just there in case the president dies, mm-hmm. just to take over. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought in that show she eventually becomes president.
She might. I just started with season one.
Oh, okay. Anyway. All right, so we're getting close to the end of my questions. Is there anything else about Rhonda Iannucci or Death of Stalin that you want to bring up?
Well, what did you think?
Overall about the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was great. I really liked it. And I thought, once again, I also really liked how it's not entirely, like you said, completely goofy. And, like, there are parts that are really played serious. And that didn't bother me at all. And I got over the fact that, you got Steve Buscemi talking like Steve Buscemi and all the Brits talking like Brits in this movie that's completely about Russia.
But, I love Steve Buscemi. And I thought they did miss an opportunity to have him pound a shoe on a table. It didn't have to be, like at the UN or wherever it was. Mm-hmm. But just because he was so famous for doing that, I kept expecting Steve Buscemi to interrupt that table talk about, no problem with standing up and pounding on the on the table with a shoe.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I at the very end when they're doing the kangaroo court for Beria, I believe when they say, he says, I will bury you. And that's what Khrushchev famously said to, I forget, some neighboring country during a conflict.
Okay, I don't remember.
Yeah, I forget, it's something like that, but that was a callback.
Sounds like something he would say.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up. Okay, then last question I'll have is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have coming up.
In the fall, I will be teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema, and also Film and Philosophy with Dr. Helen Mitchell.
Okay. Get ready for some motion. Well, comrades, this wraps up episode of Armchair Directors. We have been discussing director Rhonda Iannucci and his 2017 film Death of Stalin. Don't forget, you can listen to the Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at gloriousdragondigitalradio.podbean.com under category Armchair Directors. Comrade Westaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, Das Vidania, and the lamb is the people, and milk is socialism.